Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to episode 212 of Empty Betters. I'm your host, Harrison Scholes. I'm going to toss it across the screen to my co-host, Mr. Nick Manella. What's going on, my friend?
A lot, dude. I would say not a lot because I feel like I'm not doing anything but watching hockey the last like 6-7 days, but there's just been so much of it. We have so much to cover today and we're up late for another one. So buckle up because this is probably going to start very coherent and high energy and then go off the rails pretty quick.
I would probably second that. We are recording this at 10 p.m. at night on what? Wednesday, April 24th. So we've got Dallas versus Vegas game two going on and Edmonton versus LA game two going on. Real quick, if you had to guess your screen time between your phone and television and computer over the last like 4 days, would you classify yourself as a cyborg at this point?
Absolutely. I think the only time I haven't been looking at something hockey media related on a screen is when I was asleep.
Yeah, I think that's actually accurate. It's pretty outrageous the amount of hockey that I've consumed in the last 3 days. But nonetheless, we wouldn't have it any other way. I am now going to toss it across the screen to Mr. Mac Vogel.
Ooh. What's up? How we doing?
What's going on? You got your favorite team's gear on over there.
Yep, Thrashers in seven. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, it'll be Thrashers over Flames in the Stanley Cup final this year. So, stay hot, NHL.
Two teams with equally realistic chances of making this year's Stanley Cup final.
True, actually. Very true. Love that.
Kovalchuk versus Ginla, right?
There you go.
Yeah, inject that into my veins. No, this is I couldn't agree more with Nick's sentiment about just being asleep is the only time I'm not looking at hockey shit right now, which is it's awesome. I mean, this is the best time of year. Is anyone else having the issue? Like, I know you guys don't really live in an area where like NBA is that big of a deal right now because the Wizards blow, but it's so annoying, like going to bars. And like, don't get me wrong, I like the Bucks. I'm excited. I hope they like put another boat on the water this year. But it's not even just the Bucks. Like, I went to a bar last night and the Bucks game ended. And then I was like trying to get them to put hockey on the TV and they like did for a little bit and then just like immediately switched it over to like the second quarter of like the Oklahoma City game or whatever the fuck. And I was like, I mean, yeah, there's definitely like a third period going on right now, but I guess we're going to watch this nonsense in the second quarter of a basketball game instead. Like, just, I don't know. It's annoying. Like,
I'm with you. I think the Knicks and the Celtics still being relevant and the Sixers still all being in it. Once the big markets go away, maybe it'll settle down.
We'll see. The problem is the Celtics might not go away.
Yeah.
It is frustrating though. I get what you're saying. You know, we've talked ad nauseum this year about how much ESPN favors, you know, basketball and MLB and the NFL over at literally anything else. And you know, I get it. Hockey's the fourth out of those sports by a lot. And those sports basically drive the entire revenue for that service. But, you know, after like hour three of the same topic on the fourth different consecutive show on ESPN, yeah, it gets old after a while.
Yeah. I will say shout out to, there was one guy at the bar. He was just sitting by himself. And I asked the bartender, I was like, can you throw on like one of the hockey games for me? And he goes, he's like, which one? And I was like, I don't know, pick one. Maybe, yeah, Preds, why not? And he puts it on, and the guy next to me was like, oh, what, hell yeah. He was so fired up. And he was sitting there. After he put it on, I like kept looking over, and he was like dialed in to the hockey game. So shout out to Mr. Guy there.
We love that. Absolutely. Yeah, maybe the ESPN hockey ratings will come back now that PK Subban is making penis jokes on intermission reports. But
oh, goddamn.
Is he just trying to keep up with Biz at that point? You know, a little jealous of the guys over on TNT, maybe?
I don't know, but Levy made that 20 times weirder. If you don't know what we're talking about, you'll see it on Twitter. I promise. So we'll let the internet do its thing.
I will say, though, let's give props to ESPN where it's due. They've been putting, you know, these hockey games, they're not just on like watch ESPN. They're on the main network on ESPN and ESPN2 the past couple of days. So that has been fantastic to see. We definitely need more of that.
That is good.
For sure. Well, a couple house cleaning things, and then we will get right into all the series drama. I feel like feels like a episode of the Kardashians coming up with the amount of drama the NHL has had. But real quick, this one actually relates to us, not about the NHL, but we are super pumped to announce that we have joined the Hockey Podcast Network, also known as THPN. If we abbreviate it, now you know what we're talking about. Great network. They basically serve as a network for a lot of hockey podcasts that are kind of in the same, you know, realm size as us. They got what I think the guy told us, maybe like around 90 different shows over there. So they're doing good stuff. Go follow them on social media if you haven't already. We tweeted it out. We Instagram storied it. So we're super pumped to be a part of the network. Really looking forward to what that has in store for us.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some really, really great content under that umbrella. So it's very exciting for us to be a part of that network.
Yeah, big day for the EB boys. This has been a little bit of a long time coming for us. We've been kind of going back and forth and seeking out some other companies and stuff, but I think this is a really good fit for us. And yeah, we're all excited about it.
For sure.
Won't change any of the content of the show or any of that stuff. Just maybe a couple minor things that we have to add, but you'll notice that as we go onwards. But we are going to now move on to the NHL. Real quick, like I said, we're just going to mention this. Lindy Ruff back as the head coach of the Sabres, which he was the coach there for a bajillion years previously.
Time is a flat circle, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? The good honestly, old boys stay yeah, relevant. Wow. Sharks fire head coach Dan Quinn. I don't know if that one's fair, but, you know, Mike Greer's got his agenda.
Kind of hilarious, honestly.
Patrick Kane, I don't have the tweet in front of me, but you can look at his Twitter because he's had like three tweets in the last 7 years. You can look at his most recent tweet. It kind of feels like a goodbye to Detroit, if you want my honest opinion.
We'll see. It sounded like it. Obviously, you know, he didn't come out and say anything concrete, but if you read between the lines, I would say that that's a goodbye to the Wings.
It also almost certainly sounds like he's not done with the NHL, though, based yeah. on that tweet. So interesting stuff. A lot of speculating to come.
And then lastly, the Utah hockey team has 8 trademark applications that were filed. The Mammoth, the Ice, the Yetis, the Venom, the Fury, the Blizzard, the Outlaws, and Hockey Club were the 8 options. Real quick, what's your favorite out of these 8?
Yeti, but I think it should be no S. Isn't Yeti plural, no S?
Good
I'm a journalism guy. I'm the one who's supposed to know that, but
yeah, that is a very good question. I honestly have no idea.
I think like if they were called the Utah Yeti, I think that sounds sick. Utah Yetis, that's not as cool in my opinion.
I see what you're saying. My biggest problem with this list is you have to get rid of Ice and Blizzard off of that list immediately. Oh,
Ice is so stupid.
Yeah.
That what is this? A fucking U14 team?
Yeah. I mean, also, like, you know, hockey is a superstitious community. I can think of 2 teams that were named Ice that were junior teams or AHL teams that folded within the last 10 years.
Yeah. A lot of these suck, but yeah. I think Yeti is probably their best bet.
You also can't be the Blizzard when you're literally like one state over from the Avs.
This is also true. Which will be a great rivalry, by the way. But exciting times. I know they just had like their introduction to the Utah fan base. Liam O'Brien, or is that his first name? I can't remember. Spicy Tuna. He introduced himself as Spicy Tuna to the crowd. So pretty electric clip. I'm sure that'll make its way around. So yeah, that about does it for the house cleaning in terms of NHL news that's not playoff related. We are going to jump right into it. And we are going to start off with what has been my favorite series so far, and what I would say is the best series so far, the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche.
And maybe the hardest to predict so far. I mean, holy shit, who saw this coming, what we've seen so far?
Yeah, that was a absolutely wild game one, which is the one that we're going to kickstart this episode with. So the Jets win an absolute barn burner 7-6 in game one. And all of us sat up here, specifically me, and said, if this gets to be high scoring, the Jets don't stand a chance. And what do? The first game they come out and they win a barn burner. And the big storyline, a couple storylines out of Colorado here. Jonathan Drouin announced out for the series like an hour before puck drop. Wish I would have known that. And Georgiev, we're going to talk about the game a little bit here, but probably had his worst game in his career, I would say. And he was in the net the entire game, which I think a lot of us were shocked to see. It was the first whiteout game in Winnipeg since 2018. They had a flyover of jets over the arena. And at that moment, I questioned everything I said about Colorado winning the cup. So that was pretty cool to see in Winnipeg. There were 6 goals in the first period, 1 goal in the second period, and then 6 more goals in the third period for a grand whopping total of 13 total goals, which was nuts. Not Hellebuck's best evening, I would say, nor Georgiev's.
No, I think that was the most goals Hellebuck's given up all season so far. So that is, you know, that's crazy that the fact that they were still able to outscore that dynamic offense that Colorado has and still win that game. For me, it's the crowd, man. I mean, that's what makes this series so incredible. The anthem, the whiteout, the noise, it is just, it's hard not to root for the Jets at that point.
I even found myself kind of like saying, man, it would be cool if the Jets win. And I love Colorado and I've got them as my cup pick. So yeah, it was a great game. Like I said, Georgiev, he let in 7 goals on 23 shots with a casual .696 save percentage. I know Makar and Bednar had a couple snarky comments after the game about his performance, but the big dogs for both teams showed up. Kyle Connor, 3 points. Mark Scheifele, 3 points. Cale Makar, 3 points. I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole score sheet because we'd be here till fucking Friday. But yeah, it was an absolutely wild game. And shout out to Adam Lowry, captain of the Jets, 2 goal performance, big boy, fuck you, Western Canada hockey to a T.
Holy shit. How about that one goal that just barely jumps over the goal line?
I've never seen a puck come off the post like that before.
Imagine this goes 7 and like somebody wins in overtime or something. We're going to be talking about that goal
for sure
forever. I mean, that's just, I don't know. I never took physics. I never took a physics class in my entire life, which is crazy that I didn't have to do that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that fucking works.
So we conclude game 1 and everyone is panicking about Georgiev and net. And then we start game 2, felt like everybody was on the Jets in that game. And what happens? They score the first goal of the game pretty early in the first period. I think it was like 3.5 minutes in. And everyone's like, oh shit, here we go again. He's going to let in 10 fucking goals. But credit to Georgiev. After that first goal, he settled in real nicely in that game too. And he ended up stopping 28 of 30 shots in that game, posting a .933 save percentage. And the Avs take the game 5-2.
He locked it down. That was a really, really interesting game. Some sweet goals, some really sweet goals in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the Avs got rolling after that 1-0 deficit. You could see at the end of the first period, they were getting some momentum and some zone time. And then that second period was absolutely bonkers. They were down 2-1. And in the second half of the second period, the depth scoring finally came through. Miles Wood, Lekkonen, Parise, Manson, all these guys that, you know, aren't named Rantanen, Makar, and MacKinnon get on the board. And the goal for me that really turned the tide, and I don't know if you guys saw that turnover by Hellebuck, where I think it was Cogliano forced the turnover, and then Parise ends up burying the goal, which, you know, that was the go-ahead goal, and the Avs never looked back. That, I think the Manson breakaway was right after that, and the Avs get a big one.
Yeah, they definitely needed that one after, you know, that, I guess you could call it a heartbreaker for them in game 1, because I know they battled back into that game after being down a couple goals in the third. You know, the Jets, obviously, you want that one. You want to go up 2-0 before you go back to Colorado. But I feel like the goaltending numbers in this series are just going to be so skewed based on the fact that, you know, the first game had, what, 13 goals in it. I have a feeling this is going to continue to be high scoring. I mean, maybe it slows down a little bit here, but I feel like at the end of the day, it's just going to be like who stops those extra 2 to 3 shots, regardless of how many they've already let in.
This also just, it feels like inevitably 7 after the first.
I would agree.
It just feels like there's no way it doesn't go 7.
Yeah, like we said, it was the number one offense versus the number one defense, and we didn't know who was gonna bend the knee. And it looks like the defense is bending the knee so far. Mr. Connor Hellebuck in this series has an .870 save percentage. He has a 5.0 goals against average and 11 goals against through two games. We have not seen play like this from him at all this season.
Might be the most surprising thing of this playoffs so far.
Yeah, I would say so. So the series is going back to Denver, knotted up 1-1. If you told the Avs they would take one on the road there, I'm sure they'd take it all day. They've outplayed the Jets both games, in my opinion. If they get somewhat competent goaltending in the first game, they probably are up 2-0. But yeah,
Yeah,
I
all of a
mean,
sudden the pressure's on the Jets. They gotta, I'd say the next one is massive for them to try and get. I mean, obviously you want to get one of these two, but ideally you need that. I think you need that first one.
yeah. Last thing I'll say about this series, Cale Makar is unbelievable. I mean, I'm stating something obvious. He's unbelievable to watch. And we're about to talk about the Predators versus the Canucks after this series, which we will talk about block shots a lot. But Cale Makar doesn't get shots blocked. It's crazy, man. Like every wrist shot from the point gets through. They probably have, I don't have a stat in front of me. They got to have four goals this series strictly from him shooting from the point, and everything gets through. And he plays 27 minutes a night, and he's always on the ice. It's crazy. It's just dominating.
Yeah, I don't really know how you neutralize a player like that, especially someone who's so good defensively and then in the blink of the eye can just go the other way and essentially become a fourth forward for you.
Yeah, he is the X factor so far. I mean, we knew he would be one, but man, he looks really good. So, yeah, what do you guys think about the rest of the series? You still sticking with your picks?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see it go seven. I think I said Avs in six, but I got to agree with what Max said. This just reeks of seven games. I really hope we get seven games. I feel like that would be the perfect treat for this first round, is to get the best series to go the distance. So hopefully that's what we get here.
I'm a little nervous for the Jets. That was my pick, Jets. I forget how many games I said, six or seven. I'm a little nervous for them right now, but I gotta think Hellebuck figures it out, locks it down in this next game, or at least figures it out in one of these next two games. And you need that. You need him to figure it out and have like a crazy game where he lets in like one goal or maybe gets a shutout or something. I think that would inject a huge dose of confidence into the rest of the group, and you can build from there.
For sure. Well, we are going to move on to the next series, the Canucks versus the Predators. That series is knotted up 1-1 as well. The Canucks took game one with a huge 4-2 win, powered by Dakota Joshua with two big goals in that game, a late third period surge by the Canucks. I thought their depth looked really good in that game. Connor Garland was buzzing. Dakota Joshua, like I said, two big goals. Teddy Bluger looked really good. But the big news that comes out of that first game, apparently Thatcher Demko got injured. We're speculating maybe that last minute of the game, Mac, based on the clip that you sent.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was on the Preds, but someone runs into him. It looks like they hit his left knee, which he missed some time this season for a left knee injury. Tockett says it's an unrelated injury. I don't know if I believe that. I think it's probably the same. Excuse me. I think it's probably the same thing. We all know in the playoffs, there's a whole nother veil of secrecy that comes over for coaches and injuries and all that stuff. They just, for whatever reason, they don't want anyone to know the truth. So if
Yeah.
I had to wager, I would say it is the same thing. And he probably just for some reason wants to put a cloud of doubt on that. But yeah, you can find it the way I found it. Go on Twitter, just search Demko, look at the top tweets, scroll for a bit. There's a few videos you'll find. There's a couple different videos. First of the speculating what injured him, and then there's another one of him actually taking warm-ups in what I think is game two, and he comes right off and he kind of like slams his stick on the boards there, on the counter of the boards, and you can see the frustration where you can almost see in his eyes. He's like, oh fuck, this is something bad. So
How like mission critical is it for the Canucks if he misses the rest of this series?
I listen to the Pittsburgh guy talking. I know what you're dealing with. I know Casey DeSmith. I'm not confident if I'm a Canucks fan.
Are you saying that sinks the ship for the Canucks?
It's not good.
It's not good. There's some hope, but there's
I picked the Preds even when they had Demko. So like put it that way. This Preds team, they're feisty. Barry Trotz, Burnett, they know what the fuck they're doing. I don't know, man. I don't like it one bit if I'm the Canucks. And there's a report today that said even if they get out of this round, he might be out all of round two.
That's true.
Like, holy shit, I guess just pack it up. That is tough if you're a Canucks fan. I don't know what the fuck. That is tough.
It is very tough. And there seems to be a goalie curse in Vancouver. This is coming to us from Big Head Hockey on Twitter. But in 2013, Corey Schneider was the starting goalie, got hurt in the playoffs. 2015, Ryan Miller was the starting goalie, got hurt in the playoffs. 2020, the bubble year, Jacob Markstrom got injured in the playoffs. And now this year, Thatcher Demko gets injured in the playoffs. These guys are just cursed.
That's their last four runs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's their last four playoff runs.
That's insane. It's also such a weird franchise that you're never making it in consecutive years. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
How do you even do that?
I don't know.
How do you make the playoffs in 2013, not 14, 15, yes, then not again for 5 years, and you make it, and then not again for 4 years? Like, I'm sorry, I just don't understand. Very strange.
It's a strange pattern. I'll agree with you. So yeah, Canucks win game one. Everyone should be happy that they win their first home game since 2015 at home in the playoffs. But of course, the Demko news kind of steals the headlines. And then we go into game two, and holy shit, just like Max said, Barry Trotz, Andrew Burnett, they know what they're doing. Casey DeSmith goes in net for Vancouver. And by the way, the social media craze of like Vancouver fans saying like, KC, and like, you could do a case, like all this shit. He's a pro athlete. He knows this. Like, you don't have to make a uplifting video that he's never going to see. And by the way, guess what happens? He lets in the first shot of the game. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah. Brutal look. That was his.
I don't feel that bad.
That's his first playoff game since the spicy pork debacle in Madison Square Garden, where I almost died. Like, I was just. Anyways, I digress. The Preds earned that win. Forsberg looked incredible. He had a goal and an assist. He became the first Nashville player in their franchise history to score 30 career postseason goals. Stay hot, Washington, for giving that one up. And then the Predators, they blocked twice as many shots as they had shots on goal. They blocked, 32 shots? I think the final shot count was like in the high teens. It's insane what they
did. If they do what they did in game two for like three more games, the series is over.
Even one. They should have won game one. They played better. They played bad for like 3.5 minutes and they lost because of that. Which is, we've seen a few teams do stuff like that, honestly. We'll get to that later. But yeah, they could be up 2-0. I think the Canucks are in big, big, big trouble.
The only thing for the Canucks that I'm holding on to is that their biggest horse arguably hasn't really woken up yet, and that's Elias Pettersson. He basically has been a ghost the first two games. No points, only three shots on net. He's got to wake up, and I'm confident that he will. I think game three would be a great time, but the fact that their big horse hasn't really stepped up to the plate yet.
I got a quick interjection here. What is with the collective overreaction of hockey fans everywhere watching two games and saying, holy shit, Elias Pettersson, Mitch Marner, Alex Ovechkin, they suck. They're all washed. They didn't do anything. However many shots on goal. No, like, it's two fucking hockey games. Everyone who's ever played a hockey game out there, I have a question for you. Have you ever played two absolute shit games in a row. I have
a lot more than that.
Played like five or six shit games in a row. That's why I didn't go anywhere, but that's not the point. You see what I'm saying though? It's like, it's the playoffs. You want your stars to like rise up for the biggest games, but like, come on, it's two hockey games. Let's not freak out.
I think part of that too is, you know, similar to like what you said is going on with Mitch and what's going on with Ovi is with star players like that, the opponent is coming in with a plan to specifically neutralize you. So odds are these guys are still adjusting to the matchup.
Yeah.
Looking where the, you know, other areas to find open space and make plays are.
For sure. Speaking of that block shot stat that I read, I think a guy, Alex Carrier, he deserves a little bit of a shout out. He led all Pred skaters with 6 block shots individually. And that's huge for him, especially after he had a costly defensive play for Vancouver's go-ahead goal in game one. So a little stick tap for him. And everybody loves to talk about the shot attempts, not the actual shots on net. But the Canucks had 84 attempts. Predators only 36. But that's Nashville. They tighten it up. They block the shots. They get their sticks in lanes, and that's how they win. So they did it to a T. We're going back to Music City, knotted up 1-1. I got a question for the fans. You can tweet this at me. I believe game 3 is not till Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, they get an extra day for travel.
I would love to hear the thoughts. I have a bet on Canucks series spread -1.5. It's too late to cash it out. I would lose, but I could hedge it. I could still hedge it and just like kind of cut my losses and bet the Preds to win the series. Let me know if that's smart. The only way I'd get screwed is if the Canucks win in 5 or 7, which is, I guess, the 7-1's possible. I don't see 5, but let me know if I should hedge it because I'm starting to sweat.
I don't know why. I just have this overwhelming feeling that Nashville's going to get both of these at home.
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm the Department of Defense in the city of Vancouver, I'm gearing up hard right now.
Yep.
I think the riots are coming.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's about
tear gas, bean bags, get them ready.
You know what? I'm standing my ground. The Canucks are going to win the series. They're a better team. They're a better team. They're a faster team. They're a more skilled team. I know that doesn't always equate to a win, but I can't imagine them going down as easy as we're making it sound.
I'm not a hater either. Like, if you're listening, I actually love both of these teams, the Canucks and the Preds. I think they're both sick. I wish they could both go to the second round. Wish this matchup wasn't happening. But I'm so scared for the Canucks right now based on everything.
I'm a little nervous for them, especially since I had them kind of going deep in my bracket. So we'll see. That's probably goodbye, Charlie, but that's for another day. All right, we're going to move on to the next series, the Oilers versus the Kings. The Oilers win game one convincingly 7-4, and it wouldn't be an empty betters episode without reading an outrageous McDavid stat. McDavid became the first player in the last 26 years to have 5 assists in a playoff game. I believe this guy's name was Jeff. Is that how you pronounce it? Jeff or Geoff? Jeff?
That would be Jeff.
It's Jeff.
Sure. Jeff Courtnall had 5 assists for the Blues in game one of the 98 conference quarterfinals, also against the Kings. So it's been a hot minute. That moves McDavid to 1.6 points per game in the playoffs. That is third all-time behind only Waino and Mario, and he is literally right behind Mario. So we are witnessing perhaps the greatest playoff performer in the history of the league, and he's hungry for a cup. I don't like where this is going for LA. Zach Hyman, hat trick, Mac, great call on him, anytime goal on the EB parlay. He gets a hattie. The Oilers power play, we're going to talk about it a lot more here, but they went 3-for-4, 75%. If the Kings take more than 2 penalties a game, they're done. There's no combating what the Oilers can do on the power play. So what are your guys' overall thoughts so far?
I think you nailed it. I mean, stay the hell out of the box. I know we're going to say that for a couple more teams when we go over to the East, but you are just shooting yourself in the foot. I think a great thing that the Kings can do is take a page out of one of the things that Spencer Carberry said after the Caps-Rangers game the other day is, you know, don't look at the penalty that you take. Look at the two plays before that. You know, why did you take that penalty? It's because you got pinned in the zone, you know, because of an icing. You know, why did you take that tripping penalty? It's because you didn't keep your feet moving. So it's just little things like that, that I think, you know, once the Kings settle down, regroup a little bit, maybe do some video, I think they'll come back with a better grasp on how to handle this series. But Harry, like you said, I mean, they're digging their own grave if they continue to take unnecessary penalties here.
And this is, you know, this is the hard thing is recording during playoffs. We won't be able to tell you what's going on in game two because that's going on right now. But just while we're recording, it's about halfway through the first. And the Kings already look a lot better. They're up 1-0. They look a lot more prepared, a lot more sound. So they may have already done some adjusting and kind of gotten their shit together. But I do think the Oilers still looked, I mean, look, all things considered, they still had a chance to pull the goalie towards the end of the game and make a push. It was a late push, but the Oilers were far from perfect game one. Yeah, they had their way scoring, but like the D, they looked vulnerable for sure. So if the Kings can button up things on their side, like I'll say this, I think the Kings can more easily fix their defensive problems than the Oilers can.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Now the Oilers obviously have way more firepower offensively, but I'm saying if the Kings can find a way to button it up and muck it up, they could cause some problems for sure. Especially if they do, you know, what a lot of teams are trying to do right now that are clearly like outskilled is trying to, like I said, muck it up, maybe get that first goal and then just freaking like clog shit up and hold the lead. Like that's how they'll be able to maybe have a chance in this series.
I think you make a great point there. You know, that Oilers team is, they're not invincible. They're really, really high flying offensively, but it's not like they pulled away in that game. You know, it was still within a goal or two down the stretch. So as like I've said, you know, for a couple teams already, I'll continue to say it again, all playoffs, keep it within one or two goals. You are absolutely in that game.
Yeah. I mean, the Kings are capable. I picked them. I mean, I think they're, if they just, like Max said, don't be a bunch of dumbasses in terms of going to the box, you can do this. They're up 1-0, like we said right now. Obviously, it's hard to predict how that's going to shake out. Probably end up 6-1 Oilers now that I said it. But, yeah, the Kings can do this. So keep an eye out for them. If this ends up getting knotted up 1-1, maybe we're looking at a 6 or 7-game series. But if this goes 2-0 Edmonton, I have a feeling that we could lose hope really quickly and have no momentum. So.
Yeah, I would agree.
We'll see how that all shakes out. Like Max said, sucks we can't recap game two without staying up till 1 a.m. But this doesn't pay all the bills, ladies and gentlemen, contrary to what you might think.
And I do have a 9-to-5 that I have to show up to tomorrow. So,
yeah,
I'm not staying up that late for you guys.
Yeah, we're not all content creators. So we're going to move on to the next series, the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights. And let me tell you, folks, if there is a script, man, they wrote a good one, because this was just the most internet boggling game that you could possibly have scripted if you were a script writer. Vegas wins 4-3, and who else but Mark Stone to open the scoring in this game within the first 2 minutes of the first period. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on that first.
I don't want to take anything away from Mark Stone, because obviously the guy had, you know, some pretty serious health concerns that kept him out. And it's great to see him back in the postseason, because he's such a dynamic player, especially for that team. But this kind of just reminds me of, like, if you're watching a soccer game and like you see a guy like dive, lay on the ground, he's like holding his ankle, screaming in pain. And then like you look over 2 minutes later and he's just full sprint with the ball down the sideline.
Oh, so Sidney Crosby, every game he's ever played.
Yeah. Sure.
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, we all know Stone's an absolute warrior. You know, this is what he does. He is the game breaker for that team. Him and Marshy, and, you know, they both scored in game one. Go figure.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Hate the rule, don't hate the player. It's not his fucking fault.
Exactly.
Which is hilarious, considering if you saw the interview after the first, I think it was after the first period, they were interviewing Stone, or maybe it was after the game, I'm not sure. Either way, they're interviewing him like in the building, like just, you know, in the the runway there, and he was getting just belligerently booed by the Stars fans. And it's like, I get it. Like, you can't really boo anyone for the rule other than Bettman, which he's not going to come out until it's the cup. So you like, yes, I get you're booing him because you hate the rule, but it's not his fucking fault. And it was funny. You should look it up if you haven't seen it. It's a funny interview because he gets asked the first question and he goes, what? Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Cause that's how loud it is. So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. They definitely need to fix that rule. I have confidence they'll figure something out eventually, but for now, this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, that Stars crowd has been pretty raucous to start these first couple games here. What have your guys' thoughts on that been?
Well, I think everyone's aware of the Glassbanger guy. I know Chicklets is having a feud with them. We don't need to touch on that too much. You can read the tweets if you want to see it. But yeah, the rest of the crowd, they've been pretty good. Obviously, we're not watching game two, or I'm not watching game two at the moment, but they've been solid.
I believe it's 1-1 after one.
It is.
Yeah. So not much to report there. Yeah, great crowd. They gotta find a way to win this game. And yes, Obviously you're listening, you already know the result. Hopefully that's a non-issue now. But yeah, if they go down 0-2 and it's back over to Vegas, shit.
So over. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I was looking up some stuff today about road teams, because we've got a lot of teams that are, I mean, the series are switching, so I was curious about the road stats. Dallas was the best road team in the NHL this season, so there is hope. But yeah.
The only time the Washington Capitals have ever won the Stanley Cup, they lost the first two at home. So
yeah, keep clinging to that one. See how that works for you.
Yeah, will do. Yeah, if the Stars don't win tonight, you can basically just take my bracket out behind the barn and just put that thing out of its misery.
Mine too.
Yeah,
holy shit.
It is just toast at that winner point.
Oh yeah, both of us. That's right. We picked them.
Yeah.
By the way, Marchessault, he scored as we're recording this in game two. He also scored in game one. Playoff Marchessault, he's probably out the door after this year now that they brought in Hurdle. So he's kind of given his last hurrah. But damn, man, he's a gamer. He's a playoff gamer. I mean, obviously, you saw what he did last year, but picking up right where he left off. So kudos to him. Game two, obviously, like I said, we're recording during it, so we can't talk too much on it. So that means we are going to move on out to the Eastern Conference. But before we do, I think Nick has a word from Kane Footwear.
Absolutely, I do. Well, boys, those West Coast teams have to do quite a bit of traveling during the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're flying from Winnipeg to Edmonton. You're flying from Vancouver to Nashville, from all over the place. You know, you're just flying a lot. I can't think of a better shoe to travel in than Kane Footwear. Going through the airport, going through security, boom, slip off, super comfortable, you know, light, keep your feet cool. They're fantastic. Head to the link in our bio today to get a pair of the most comfortable shoes you will ever own.
Absolutely. I'm going to pull a fastball on you guys. We're going to start with Bruins and Leafs because that is fresh off of game three. We actually waited to record until the game was over so we could chat about it. Just going to run through the first two games real quick. Obviously, Mac talked about the Demko knee injury and how nobody says anything about injuries right now. Well, no one knows that better than the Toronto fans, because where is Willie Stiles? Where is he?
The rumors that I've sort of heard, or people have told me, is that he collided with Brody, or I think it was like, I'm pretty sure it was Brody in practice, and that this is precautionary for a head thing.
I would buy that. I've heard head, like, yeah, migraine kind of stuff.
Okay, but precautionary for three games?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this
I
had
don't
to
think
be
it's
a pretty
precautionary
good
at that point. Yeah. I think it's, he either has a concussion now or he doesn't.
I think it's just weirder that for three games we don't have a timeline. But Harry, like you pointed out, I mean, everyone, you know, hockey coaches turn into the Soviet Union when it comes to disclosing injuries in the postseason. So I think that's just the way it goes.
No, it's true. I mean, game one, Boston just stomped on Toronto's throat. 5-1 win. The Leaf killer, man. Jake DeBrusk, 2 goals. Swayman looked fantastic. The Leafs gave up a goal on their first shot against, which is just so Leafs. And Domi, there's a lot of penalties with some clips going viral there. He took some dumb slashing penalties against Marchand, who has been an absolute monster in this series, might I add. Just an ass-whipping, basically, in game one. And the no Nylander thing, maybe that shook Toronto a little bit. I don't know, but yeah.
Just seemed like they weren't dialed in off the hop. I mean, literally right before the puck dropped, Domi is slashing at Marchand in full view of the referee. It's like, if you want to set the tone, that's fine. But when you follow that up by slashing him again later on in the game directly in front of the referee, letting him score his first power play goal in over 40 games, I mean, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. So obviously they cleaned it up for game two, but that Sammy did not start that game great. I know the first goal was not necessarily something you can pin on him, 2-on-1 going the other way after a bad pinch, but letting in a goal on the first shot, stopping, you know, the next two and then letting in another one was not ideal at all for the Leafs that game.
Ed, I can't wait to talk about game three and Sammy, because it's pretty funny what happened. So that'll do game one. We move on to game two, and this was the Austin Matthews show. He just took over that game, and it was a sight to see. One goal, the game-winning goal, which was beautiful. 2 assists in that game. He dominated. Sammy actually looked pretty damn good. Toronto had some pretty quick responses to Boston's goals, which was the key to the win entirely, in my opinion. But the big controversy, Boston goes to Linus Ullmark after Swayman won game one. What's your guys' thoughts on like this rotation thing?
So I heard, and we'll touch on it more when we get to game three, but I heard Ray Ferraro say after game three ended, he said, if I'm, you know, in charge of that decision, the rotation ends now. It's over. Like, the way Swayman played game three, you do not two. Take that guy. No, three.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Swayman, you said. Yeah.
Yeah. The way Swayman played game three, you don't take him out. And I mean, it's hard to argue that he's won both games he played. Right.
Yeah.
And he, I don't know.
I'd be shocked.
I would too. I said at the beginning of the playoff previews, I said, yes, I know they'll go in with the same mentality as the regular season, but this will figure itself out. I think it just did.
I agree. I think you're only hurting yourself if you continue to do this rotation thing, because you're not allowing your goaltender to build any sort of momentum whatsoever. I mean, he's basically off for anywhere between 3 to 5 days between games, which I don't think necessarily anyone wants to do in the playoffs unless they're hurt. So I think hands down, Swayman just won the net in game three. That's a no-brainer for me. If you go back to Ullmark, something better be wrong with Swayman or wrong with whoever made that decision. I just can't rationalize it.
So yeah, game three, the one that just happened, we kind of jumped quick there, but game three, the Bruins end up winning 4-2. It was a great game, kind of wrapping up game two here. But yeah, Matthews ended up winning the game for Toronto, basically, and Ullmark got kicked out. They go back to Swayman for game three. Still no Willie Nylander. But man, Swayman stood on his fucking head. He looked incredible. He's only let in 3 goals in the whole series. He's played 2 games. I mean, you got to ride him in game four. I don't know how you don't.
And game three was also just the Bertuzzi versus Marchand show. That was highly entertaining, and boy did Marchand get the upper hand. I would like to put my vote for goal of the playoffs so far. That Marchand shot, holy fucking shit,
that was sick.
I thought the Jack Roslovic goal against the Caps last night was putting the puck in a teacup. Good god, that, like, oh my god, I don't like that. I'm speechless about the shot that Marchand took. That is unbelievably good.
Yeah, big time snipe. The Bruins power play, man, it's clicking. 4 goals in the series so far and power play goals in their last 7 consecutive playoff games. Leafs got to stay out of the box, and that was a chippy game from start to finish. What did we say? There was how many hits were in the first period? I think I texted it to you guys.
I think there were 50 total. Like, not even halfway through the game or something like that.
Yeah, it was a very physical game. But the one part of this game that we have to discuss, and it ties into what I said about Sammy, I think the Leafs were up 2-1. And I texted you guys. I was like, yo, Sammy looks kind of good. And within 1 minute of that, Trent Frederick lets an absolute muffin go from the left hash mark, basically. And somehow Samsonov let that in. And that was all you had to see in the arena, was the wind out of the sails immediately. It was like, we know exactly what's about to happen.
Yeah, that's absolutely one you have to have in the playoffs. I mean, those are the saves you just need to make. And whether it bounces off of someone or he just doesn't see it or he just misses it, I mean, those are the things you're going to look at the end of the series. And unfortunately, that's just part of being a goaltender in the NHL.
Yeah, and it sucks, right? Like, he made two crazy breakaway saves tonight, yep. And then he lets that one in. So it's like, you know, if he makes that save and lets one of the breakaways in, no one's blaming him, but it's the same result.
Exactly.
The way it went down, it's frustrating.
Yes.
Mac, why don't you share your thoughts on the Toronto crowd? Because I 100% agreed with you.
Wait, what did I say about them?
It was just like, they're so lame. Like, it's like not loud. Or
Oh, yeah. I think that was Nick saying it. Yeah.
I apologize. Sorry. Group chat blew up today. Well, Nick, why don't you explain what you were saying?
I'm not trying to rip on Leaf fans, but you could see on the faces, you could hear it in the building. Winnipeg was 10 times louder than that building, which I know it's the Jets, so that's an anomaly anyways. Vancouver, easily twice as loud.
Do where your part. Leafs,
right?
You're the Mecca.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get, like, there's nerves, too. So, like, part of it is you're scared, but, like, you can't show that. Like, you gotta just be, yeah, like Harry said, do your part. You can't. The team can sense when there's apprehension in the arena too. Like, that's a real thing.
It's one of the only arenas, I think, in the postseason where every time a goal against is scored, you can just feel the stress from the players, coaching staff, fans just slowly start to go up.
Yeah, and to an extent that happens everywhere, but it definitely feels like it's on a whole nother level in Toronto, because yeah. You can just feel the, like, domino fall of, like, yeah, we just let in, it's just one goal, but holy shit, what if now we lose the game? And what if we lose the series? Like, you can feel the just, like, the speculation and the horrors.
The horrors persist. You know, to make, of course, a Caps analogy here, it's like in the early 2010s, you know, the Caps would have a 3-1 series lead, and then, you know, a lead at some point in game 5, 6, or 7, and, you know, the other team just starts to pull it back and you go, oh God, here we go again. They're going to blow it.
Yeah. I find it really funny every time that there's like a meltdown moment, they immediately put the camera on Sheldon Keefe and he's just pacing. And it's like, it's crazy how, like, time is flat when you're watching it. It's like 2016. Oh, it's Mike Babcock doing that. You know, 2024. Oh, it's Sheldon Keefe doing that. It just never changes. But
that is just a thankless job unless you win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. So Brad Marchand, 2 goals, gets the game-winning goal and the empty netter, which I was surprised there was no fight after that, because we've had a couple scuffles, if you will, as a result of empty nets. Real quick, we're going to move on to the next series. But game 4 in Toronto. If you guys were to set the money line odds for this game, I got them pulled up in front of me. What would you guess for Toronto?
I feel like it'd be close to a pick-em. Maybe
it's pretty damn close.
Maybe you do like Toronto +115.
Good, decent guess. You were within a good rate. They're -115. From okay. What I'm seeing.
Ooh. So yeah.
So they are slightly favored.
All right.
I think they tie it up. I think they get one at home.
They have to, right?
I think they're gonna bounce back. They bounce back great in game 2.
Yeah. I'd be pretty surprised if they go down 3-1.
Yeah. I know I was just critical of the crowd, but, you know, I think they're gonna get behind them. I think they'll tie it up. I mean, that if that doesn't work, just take the crowd from outside in Maple Leaf Square and say, okay, switch with everyone inside and just be as loud as crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
For the good of the order.
Yeah, you have to give up your ticket because you're not loud enough.
in Canada, it could work. All right, we're going to move on to the Battle of Florida, the Panthers versus the Lightning. I might as well just call it Bobrovsky versus Vasilevsky because that's basically what this series has been. I was thinking about this today, by the way. Have we ever had this many Russian goaltenders as starting goalies in a postseason? I was thinking today, I think I counted six, which is nuts. That's a lot.
Bobrovsky, Sorokin, / Varlamov, I'm counting them both.
Georgiev,
Shesterkin. And you didn't, did you name Bob or Vasi? Yeah.
Oh, Vasi. Yeah, Vasi too. Yeah. Six. Yeah.
It's crazy. That's a lot.
I guess that's it. Damn.
It's really seven too, if you count the Islanders duo as two different people, but.
Oh, I thought I did.
He did.
Either way. No. Yeah.
It'll be seven when Kochetkov gets a couple games here.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to that series shortly. Game one, honestly, both these games, they were great games, but from like a scoring perspective, there's really not a whole lot to talk about. Tight checking games, good goaltending. Game one, the Panthers win 3-2. They came out humming. I mean, they looked like the Stanley Cup contender in the first period of that game. It took Tampa almost 16 minutes just to get a shot on net. Florida jumps out to a quick 1-0 lead, and then Hagel tied it up later in the first period. 77 combined hits through two periods of play in that game. And then in the third period, maybe the clutchest player in the National Hockey League. Carter Verhaeghe gets the go-ahead goal off a sweet feed from Barkov. And then Tkachuk gets the empty netter as the Cats hold on. Basically a 3-1 lead. And then Stamkos got a garbage time goal with 8 seconds left. So Cats win 3-2. It was just a classic, playoff shutdown effort. Bobrovsky looked unbelievable. I don't really have too much to add to that. You guys got anything you want to?
Yeah, I think the Verhaeghe thing is just incredible. I think, you know, regardless of whether this guy ends up winning a Stanley Cup or not in his career, and who knows if that's going to happen, I think even 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we'll still be saying, like, do you remember how clutch Carter Verhaeghe was in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Because there's just so many examples from their run last year, from times before that, from this game, from the overtime, you know, goal in game two. I mean, this is just, it's insane what this guy does. He takes over.
Well, we'll stay hot on that topic. We moved to game two and the Panthers win yet again, 3-2 in overtime. And guess who scores the overtime winner? Mr. Carter Verhaeghe. He has the second most overtime playoff winners since 2018. It's only behind Andre Palat. And from what I read on Twitter, third most all time. Joe Sakic is first with 8. Maurice Richard is second with 6. And then there's a bunch of guys tied for third with 5. So pretty elite company to be in. This guy is Mr. Clutch. In terms of that game two, very similar to game one. Panthers jump out to a 2-0 lead by Bennett and Tarasenko. And then in the second period, Tampa comes storming back and ties it. Braden Point and Steven Stamkos, and holy shit, what a shot Stamkos had to tie that. But the big storyline, the save. Probably the save of the year, regular season or playoffs.
That's not the save. We know what the save. Well, save of the year, but it's not the save. Let's be real. We know what the save is.
That save was cooler.
Oh God, yeah. Don't even go there.
Not in terms of the magnitude of it, because obviously you have a cup final, but in terms of the acrobatics and
I'll give you that.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean I get what you're saying, but that was. That Bobrovsky save on Matt Dumba was something to see, man. That was crazy.
I saw people online saying that that's just, it's blind luck. It hit him. I'm like, I don't know about that, dude. I mean, to contort your body like that, unless he sneezed, I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything lucky about that. If anything, you could argue there's more luck in the Holtby, the save, not from Holtby, but in Tuck shooting it right at the fucking stick. You had the whole net, you fucked up, made Holtby look sick. But I think this is an unbelievable save, and it's definitely something they're going to look at later on in the series when the Cats win.
Yeah, it's really looking like that, isn't it? Which is kind of pissing me off because I had Tampa and I have money on Tampa. Which is not fun. So
I don't want to count Tampa out just yet, though. I mean, both of these games are one goal games. I feel like it could very easily flip, but I do have to agree. Florida does just look that extra little bit stronger right now.
And deeper. Yeah. So we got game three coming back to Tampa. We got Tampa as -120 favorites. The Cats are +100, even money to pull off an upset and go up 3-0. So if I'm Tampa, your power play needs to go in sicko mode. Like that's what been your bread and butter all year long. Needs to be the bread and butter here. I'm talking clicking at like 50% minimum because Bobrovsky, I didn't think he was going to be quite this sharp. I knew he'd have a game or two, but my God, I mean, he's a brick wall.
I will say the two goals where, two goals he allowed in game two. He looked really like frustrated and bothered by both of them. Like he, for like a hot second after both of the goals, he's like looking down at the net, like how the fuck did that go in? So I think he is a rattleable goalie. Like if you can score more power play goals, like you're saying, just get more pucks on net. He's definitely, you can get to him, but yeah, if you let him get hot, it's over.
A pretty brutal injury for the Panthers. Sam Bennett is going to be out week to week is what we're hearing. So
yeah, that's tough. He blocks that's friendly fire too, which it's a freak accident. There's no one to blame on that play, but he accidentally blocks a shot from his own defenseman right off the hand. And I'm guessing he probably just broke his hand or something.
Yeah. So that's tough, but I think they'll be all right. So Nick, I want to ask you as my comrade who took Tampa with me, coming back to Amalie Arena, what are your thoughts? Like, do we have hope?
I think so. Like I said, these were both one-goal games. I don't think that Tampa is out of this by any means. I think they could very easily win these next two, and the series is all tied up.
What do you think of that -120 number in game three?
That's
tickling me to a dangerous point.
Yeah. That's tempting. I kind of wish it was a little bit better just on how the first two went, but I guess that's par for the course with them being so close.
I almost think the plus a hundo for the Cats is a little more
probably
tempting.
I
think it should almost be flipped.
Yes.
But because it's not, I'm almost like, well, maybe I would throw $20 on even money for the Cats to just put their dick on the table and go up 3-0. That's crazy. I don't know.
It's a little home ice factor, I think, factored in there. All right. Well, we are going to move on to the fun series. The Rempire Strikes Back. The Rangers versus the Capitals. The Rangers have a 2-0 series lead. Game one, shout out to anyone who watched with me and Nick at Don't Know Tavern. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Rempy. Got a goal, kind of stirred the pot a little bit, had a pretty decent role in that game. Ovechkin, I know there was a big storyline. First time he didn't have a shot on net in a playoff game since 2018. People were making that all go around the internet. And then the Caps power play versus the Rangers penalty kill. I think I texted you guys like, the Caps power play fucking sucks. And Mac was like, no, the Rangers penalty kill is just really good. I think both could be true.
The Caps power play was the best in the league in the last month, maybe month and a half of the season, something like that. I fully believe that this is just a cracked out Rangers penalty kill. And we actually we had two power play goals in game two. We started to figure it out a little bit. But yeah, that is a gnarly good penalty kill from Laviolette and the Blue Shirts. What they do is they stack three guys horizontal across the blue line and, you know, try to fucking enter. You basically have to dump it in unless, you know, what we tried is to send somebody with speed like Lapierre and just have him come with more speed through the neutral zone, which it's better, but I still am kind of with Nick said it best. He's like, I feel like Don Cherry saying this, but just fucking dump it in and go get it. And that's kind of the only way you beat that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the cap zone entry for what feels like 5 years now. It's something that has just declined when this team loses its speed. like you mentioned, there's a couple guys that are younger, you know, Lappe, McMichael, that can really fly with the puck that you obviously want carrying it in. But with how good that Rangers team is on the penalty kill, with how fast those guys are, with how skilled and mobile they are, you just got to get it in behind them and go get it off the wall. Go back to the gritty game. That's what's going to keep you in this series, I think. You know, obviously, looking at game two versus game one, I think there's a lot more positives to take away from game two. I know it's not the result the Caps fans wanted. Both were insanely frustrating to watch for, I would say, a couple different reasons. But I thought Carbs made some great points in that interview you brought up after the game. I mean, there are positives here that hopefully they can capitalize on coming back to DC.
I don't have a lot of issues with game two. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I think if they play that way, yeah, there's a couple mistakes. And honestly, they come from all the, you look at all the youth and inexperience in our lineup. I thought Lucas Johansson played very well in his first playoff game. I think the young guys looked great. The mistakes came from Alex Ovechkin and John Carlson in game two with that cross check from Carlson, unnecessary. They've been calling it all postseason. You know it's coming, not necessary. And then Ovi with a brutal turnover on the power play there. That's tough for sure. So it's fixable stuff, but I think for the most part, if they play the way they did in game two, I think we at least win one, maybe two games here.
You would hope so. I would say my concerns, and you just mentioned John Carlson. Right now, the defense is my big concern. And I, you know, like you mentioned, Lucas Johansson played, I thought, great for his first playoff game the other day, but Carlson's played 57 minutes through two games. He had 27 in game one and over 30 in game two.
That's crazy.
And
that's
this ridiculous. Is after basically leading the NHL or co-leading with Doughty all season in that category. The loss of Sandin and Jensen is very noticeable. They're definitely missing it. They're definitely missing two puck-moving defensemen who are great at not only playing defense, but starting breakouts, helping assist, you know, the wingers get the pucks up the wall and stuff like that. So we don't have any timeline right now. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later, because I think that could make a significant difference for this Caps team to finish this series out.
Notice how I talked about game one and they just immediately jumped to game two, folks, because game one was just an absolute shit kicking. But yeah, let's move on to game two. It's more fun. 17 total penalties in this game. I know there was a lot of chatter about the refs in this one. Why don't we just parlay this conversation? Let's talk about 17 penalties called, and let's talk about the Panarin and Oshie hit.
So first things first, I just want to say this. The officiating has just been so wildly inconsistent. It's just frustrating. And I'm not saying that because the Caps have lost the first two games, because it's been bad both ways. There's penalty calls that the Caps have gotten where I'm just like, wow, I don't even know if you see that in the regular season. And, you know, Mac, you mentioned this. I think Stromer nailed it in his post-game presser where you could see the frustration. And he even said, he's like, hey, it's both ways right now. You know, we just don't know what's getting called and what's not. So that's obviously frustrating to see as a fan. I'm sure it's frustrating to deal with as a member of the coaching staff, but I just, you know, looking at the Panarin Oshie hit, there's so many differences of opinion on this one, but the overwhelming one I've seen from reputable analysts and not NY Rangers fan 9957995 on Twitter is principal point of contact's the head. They were expecting at least a minor penalty.
It's crazy to me that there was nothing. I will say that. I think I take a little bit of a different stance on this hit. I think what's up for debate is where the principal point of contact is. I could see you arguing, yeah, he hits him mostly in the chest or whatever. One thing I've seen a lot of Rangers fans saying on Twitter that's just blatantly incorrect is that he had his arm tucked. He did not have his arm tucked. He drives forward with his arm upwards into his head. That happens. that's not up for debate. Another thing, and I wasn't able to find this on Twitter after, but during the game, they actually showed when they were reviewing it, they zoomed in on an angle. Both of Panarin's skates come off the ice. Like he jumps to hit him. He left his feet for sure. It's gotta be a 2-minute penalty at least. And even if it's just that, I'm not horribly upset about that, but it's absolutely insane to call nothing on that play. If not for any other reason, because you're just gonna lose control of the whole fucking series by doing that. Like even if you're trying to argue that that's not a penalty, it's in the ref's fucking best interest to at least call two for, I don't know, elbowing, or it wasn't really an elbow. I don't know what you call, but that's crazy. And another thing Carberry said is then Oshie gets pulled by the concussion spotters for a head contact. This is the league that does that. It's also the league that reviews the call. So explain to me how, yeah. Like, I'm sorry, that just doesn't make any fucking sense.
It's just the inconsistency again. It just has to stop.
Yeah. And then you got absolutely idiotic people on Twitter trying to compare that hit to game one, Tom Wilson hitting Zibanejad. Listen, I'll give you this. Wilson probably deserved like an interference call or something. It was definitely a little bit of a late hit. I'll give you that. There's no head contact on the play. No. Zibanejad can snap his head back all he wants. That's just a result of a hard hit directly to the chest. No blindside, directly front of him. He's coming from the front of him. And that's even more hypocritical because everyone's trying to say, Oshie, keep your head up or whatever. I mean, Zibanejad, he's coming right at you. So I don't know.
If Wilson makes that hit, suspension. That's the big argument.
If Trouba makes that games. Hit, suspension.
Yeah, 100%.
A lot of Rangers fans, not saying they're right, but they just were saying, like, Oshie had it coming. Oshie had it coming.
That's the other thing that pisses me off. Again, dude, if you think Oshie, there's people trying to say Oshie's a dirty player. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So he's again, chippy. Though, he battles, chippy. And he definitely had, yeah, sure, he had some penalties. Yeah, I'll agree with you guys that the high stick or whatever, yeah, they missed that one. Yep. Yeah, they missed some shit. We've been saying the refs have been bad for both sides. They missed shit. But what really bothers me is the total off the edge Ranger fans trying to be like, oh, well, because Oshie accidentally high sticked one of our guys, he deserved it, and I hope he's concussed. Like, there were literally people on Twitter saying, like, he deserved to get hit in the head because he accidentally high sticked one of our guys. Like, it fucking make sense. Welcome to New York Rangers fandom. Exactly.
That's just a different level of narcissism, but. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's frustrating because, yeah, that, you know, that high stick should have been a penalty. Then if they call that, does that reverse hit even happen? It makes you wonder, but,
you know.
Obviously, it's not a situation that's going to change the game or the outcome of the game whatsoever.
Let's move to game three. We got something to look forward to.
One last thing I just want to say. It feels to me like the NHL can't have their precious, the bread man. We can't have him out of the fucking series or whatever. Yeah, okay. Yeah, not even going to give him a hearing today either, because that would make you look bad, right, to go back on what you already reviewed and said wasn't a penalty. So, of course, yeah, whatever. I'll get too pissed about this if we keep talking.
Drop the fucking mic, Mac. Holy hell. That was a good one. Okay, game three. Listen, we got Rangers fans listening. We know this. So, like, to their credit, they are a much better team. They kicked the shit out of you guys in game one.
100%. Not denying that by any means.
Yep.
Game two, a little bit more of a coin flip, but like,
yeah,
they capitalized when they needed to. I mean, on all seriousness. So game three, we're moving to that. Caps are +140 underdogs at home. If they lose game three, it is extremely over. It's probably already teetering towards that point. What do you guys think about game three?
So I think we've talked about this before, but obviously getting the first goal for this team is huge. They play so much better when they get that early goal, early lead. And unfortunately, just the nature of what the battle plan here seems to be for the Washington Capitals, it's score as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and then hold on for dear life. I would also argue that they probably don't just need the first goal of the game. They need the first goal of every period.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think Ray Ferraro said something really, really true in game two. He said, if you're the Capitals, you're coming in this series, you're playing the President's Trophy team. They've got, what, 15 more wins than us or something like that in the regular season. Your margin for error is basically zero. If you want to have even a slight chance in this series, your margin for zero for error is essentially nothing. Like, you can't fuck up kind of at all, or else you're totally going to pay for it. And we have so far, like with penalties, the Ovi turnover I already mentioned. There's stuff like that that's unforced errors where it's like, yeah, you're going to pay for this if you make that mistake against the best team in the league. So
very true.
Yeah, that much is super accurate. I do think that, like, listen, I've said all along, the whole reason I wanted us in the playoffs is for this exact reason, because you've got guys like McMichael, Strome getting their first goal in the playoffs ever. You've got guys like Alexiev and Lucas Johansson who are just trial by fire. Just here you go. You have to figure out how to play in an NHL playoff game right now, and not just playing it. You have to figure out how to play 20 plus minutes in an NHL playoff game right now. Do it. Go out there, figure it out. And guess what? You're going to do it against the best team in the league too.
Yep.
So I honestly think in some ways this is best case scenario, even if we get, you know, swept. Really what's best case scenario, and I talked about this with my dad today, and I think this is super accurate. Best case scenario right now for the Capitals, win one home game and win one away game. And I think that is something that you can super, super build on for the future and say, holy shit, we figured out how to win a home game and a road game against the best team in the league, President's Trophy winners, team that's favored to win the cup this year, with a bunch of young guys that are probably going to get sent down to Hershey to go try and win another Calder Cup as soon as this is over. So that's kind of the mindset for me right now. I'm not even have sights set on winning the series. It's like, figure out how to win one of these next two and then, you know, win one more away.
How much you want to bet if the Caps win game three? This is for the listeners, not you two. To the listeners, how much you want to bet if the Caps win game three that I'm going to get these two guys telling me how they're going to win the series and how they're going to come back and how they're going to shove it up all New York's ass? I can't wait.
I think you mean when they win game three and when they come back and win the series. No, I'm kidding.
What about the game three part? You kidding about that?
No, I think they will get game three.
I need them to. I have Rangers in five at plus 280. And if they lose game three, the Caps lose game three, I know they're going to get swept. So I need a win from your boys. I need it. That's the only thing I'm going to cash. Because
I do think a big thing, Nick touched on it earlier, I think a huge thing is Carberry being able to control those matchups. Yes. I said it a little bit earlier. People are freaking out about star players so far being ghosts or whatever, or not showing up. Ovi will be fine. Another thing that really bothered me about this series so far is all the reporters trying to make clickbait headlines saying shit like, oh, Carberry calls out Ovechkin and says he hasn't looked like himself or whatever. This is an 8-minute interview with Spencer Carberry. They ask him about Ovechkin. I love Carberry. He's a super honest coach. He doesn't hide shit. He's very candid with the media. He tells it like it is. So he says, yeah, he hasn't looked like himself. But if you listen to the whole clip, he also fires him up and says, I'm not worried about it. He's going to figure it out. We're going to get him some better matchups. We're going to put him on the ice. He's going to figure it out. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys are going to win game three, I'm pretty certain he's going to have to get on the score sheet at some point. So we'll see. He kind of fucked me the other night, so I don't know if I'm going to trust him in game three, but we'll see. We're going to move on to Carolina in New York. That is the last series, and then we will be out of here. This is just the most classic Carolina and Islanders series ever. Just fits the script, right? Like, first game, tight check-in. Honestly, kind of boring. Like, truthfully, very boring. Freddie Anderson looked great, so kudos to him. The Islanders actually looked pretty competent. Kuzi opens the scoring with a nice little snipe, little bird celebration. He ends up getting 2 points on the night. The Islanders' penalty kill, worst in the regular season, and it continues to bite them in the ass again in the postseason. And Carolina ends up winning 3-1. So I don't really have too much to say. It was a pretty boring game, but that game too, man, that's the one that made its way around the internet. It is a complete brain pretzel on how the Islanders in the first two periods controlled the game and were winning 3-0, because Carolina was quite literally destroying them in every statistical way besides the scoreboard. And I couldn't figure out how the Islanders were holding on. But in typical Islanders fashion, they have an epic third period collapse, blow their 3-goal lead. The Islanders actually were 81-0 in franchise history when holding a 3-goal lead in the playoffs until this game. And Carolina comes back and ends up winning the game 5-3. Big storyline. Carolina had 110 shot attempts, and the Islanders had 28. I think that is the biggest differential in NHL history. I have no stat to back that up. I'm just going off vibes. So what were your guys' thoughts in the first two games?
I don't even think we really need to talk more about game one. You said it all. That's fine. And unsurprising and uninteresting to everyone involved. Game two, if you're a true Islanders fan, which I know a lot of you listening are, this was not shocking to you. Like, as Harry just said, you got outplayed the whole game. It was shocking, maybe even to you, that you were winning 3-0. And I was texting, I watched that entire game. I was texting friend of the program and massive Islanders fan, Stephen Baker. And at the end of the game, he said, he was like, I never once believed we were winning this game. Like, you could feel it. You could feel it the whole time that this was not sustainable. The Hurricanes, they just do this. They do that exact thing where they outplay you, and maybe they let in a couple shitty goals or whatever, lucky bounces, and they'll figure it out. They'll get back on top. It's unsurprising. Is it upsetting? For sure. But it's unsurprising in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. This is just what the Hurricanes do. You know, they tie that game with what, like 5 to go in the third, I think, or something like that. And then they get the game winner or the go-ahead goal 9 seconds later. I mean, that reminds me of what Vegas did in 2018, where they would just score in very quick bunches, like 2 goals in 30 seconds, 3 goals in like 2.5 minutes or something like that. And I think just there's so many teams in the postseason that just can't handle that, especially the Islanders, who, let's be real, kind of take their time to, you know, put something up on the score sheet. Whereas the Canes, it just happens when the wind blows.
This is the other thing that, and you kind of just started to say it, but not just this year, a little bit last year and other years, but so far this year, there's like a big trend of after a goal is scored, both teams not fucking being ready right after that. Like I've seen a ton. You saw it in the Bruins Leafs game tonight. Like both, like the Leafs almost scored right after that one goal and they didn't. And then Marchand goes down and score. Like, there's something about like these coaches have got to get their teams settled the fuck down after a goal for either side is scored, because something is in the water with, like, after a goal gets scored, both teams, I don't know if it's the crowd or just the energy of on the ice or what, but like, we've seen goals and almost goals constantly right after a goal is scored.
That was a big thing that my old coach, Mike Schrammick, he always emphasized that. The shift right after a goal is arguably the most important in a game. He hammered that home back in the good old high school hockey days. But, yeah, Seth Jarvis, want to give him a shout-out. He's looked great this series, had a 6-snipe to kind of cut the lead to 3-2 in the second. And then, like Nick said earlier, the floodgates open when Aho ties the game, and then Martinook within 9 seconds ends up giving Carolina the lead. Gensel buries the empty net. Brock Nelson tries to fight him after he scores the empty net because I guess he shot the puck too hard, which seems to be a trend going around the league this year. It's kind of stupid, in my opinion.
Dude, like, that's so regular season. Like, it's the playoffs. If I need to wire the puck to get it into the net, I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm here to win games. If you don't like how I scored against your team, stop me from scoring.
I like that mentality. So the series goes back. Canes. Series goes back to Long Island. Hurricanes up 2-0. Patrick Waugh's already announced we're getting a goalie change. They're going from Varlamov to Sorokin.
Do you guys think, do you blame Varlamov for that goal?
The game one, he played fine. Game two, is
I agree with Harry. I was a little bit less impressed with game two, so I can sort of understand why the change is coming there. I also think it's more of just a shock to the system here to try and wake the team up.
I was going to say, let's pretend for a second that the Canes tie the game on that normal, like, extra attacker goal, and then the goal right after that doesn't happen. We go to overtime, but Canes win. I think this change still happens.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
I think it's to get the boys, like, fired up a little bit here.
Yeah.
I don't think Varlamov honestly played that bad.
He played fine, but also, you, in my opinion, I think Sorokin, when he's on, I think he's the best goalie in the league.
When he's on, yeah.
I agree. I'm also not going to sit here and question Patrick Waugh on which goalie he's going to go with, because if anyone knows, it's probably him.
Well, and it's like, from a GM standpoint, it's kind of idiotic if you play this whole series and don't even give Sorokin a chance. You know what I mean? Like, this is your, like, generational goaltending talent here. I understand Varley down the stretch has been unreal. He probably deserved the first game or two there, but it's not working. Not necessarily his fault, but yeah, it's definitely a good time, good chance to try and turn things around, flip the switch and see what happens.
Well, let's hope in game three, the Islanders can get more than 12 shots on goal. That's really all I got to say.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing here, right? You can't win a game like that. So
this is going to segue perfectly into our gambling segment, which is going to be a little bit different for the playoffs. A reminder that this gambling segment is brought to you by Prop Tracker. It is your one-stop shop for finding outlier bets for NHL, NBA, NFL, and more. Once you find a bet you like, start tracking it to get notified on its progress, like shots, rebounds, or receptions. Go to proptrackerapp.com/emptybetters to try a free month of the Android or iOS app. You can find the link to get the free month in all of our social media bios. And a reminder that there is no letter E in the word tracker. So with that, I want to ask you guys, everyone's going to be listening to this tomorrow, Thursday. So they'll be listening in time for us to give a pick out here. We've got three different 0-2 series in the East, and all of the home teams are down 0-2 for game three. We've got some juicy prices here. We've got the Bolts to win game three at -115, the Islanders to win game three at home at +135, and your guys' Washington Capitals to win at home at +140. Out of these three games, knowing the prices, what's your best bet?
I want to say the Islanders, but I don't know, man. The Canes are so good, and something about that, like, the shot totals just really bothers me. I don't know if that's something that's super fixable. I also don't like the Bolts. I hate to be a homer, but I'm actually going to say the Caps.
Jesus. I get where you're coming from. I'm going to say the Bolts, but I actually feel a lot better about the Caps' chances of winning game three than I do the Islanders. Like you said, it doesn't add up. You know, when you're not going to shoot the puck more than, what, 12, 15 times or whatever it is, and the other team is close to 100 attempted shots on goal, you're just not going to win hockey games like that unless you literally have a walrus in the net, like that stupid insurance commercial or whatever it is. But
yeah,
I got to go with the Bolts. I think they're going to come out firing. I wouldn't be surprised if Vasi just stands on his head and steals one in these next two for Tampa.
It also just feels like the Islanders, even when they were up 3-0 in that game, it feels like they've yet to truly make the Hurricanes uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like, whereas the Caps, I don't know if you'd say we made the Rangers uncomfortable, but I think they're, I think there's at least some moments in game two where they were like, are we going to win this game? I don't know. I hope so. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it was up for debate at a certain point in that game. I truly don't think there was ever a doubt for that Canes bench, even down 3-0, where they're like, no, we're winning this game.
I'm going Isles, and here's why. The three of us said on this show that this was not going to be an easy series for Carolina. just because they won two home games, I don't think that means that they're going to dominate the third one. Are they probably the biggest mismatch here? I don't know. Maybe you could argue that, but I just can't see the Islanders going down in a back against the wall at UBS with the crowd going absolutely insane. I got to go with the Isles. I don't trust the Bolts against Bobrovsky because Bob is insane, and no offense, but I want you guys to win for my bet of Rangers in five, but I don't know if I trust it. So I'm rocking Isles. We'll see. You could probably pick all three. Fuck it. Parlay all three. See what happens. You'll probably end up making money. It's a decent rule.
Damn, that'd be crazy.
It indeed would be. All right, we are going to skip trivia this week. It's running late. It's 11:30 by now. We started at, what, 10:05? So
something like that.
We appreciate everybody listening and sticking with us this long. Any final notes from you boys before we wrap up?
Just a quick shout out to Elwood's. A reminder that Elwood's is a local dive bar, and it's home of the Pizza Luge, located in the heart of downtown Milwaukee on Water Street. This 70s-inspired bar has a little something for everybody. They've got all the NHL games on every night. Obviously, there's Bucks playoffs games going on, but that is one bar. I mentioned it earlier in the playoffs, earlier in the episode, but that is one bar that I can always count on. Even if there's a Bucks game, I can go there. There will be hockey on. They've got a lot of TVs, and they prioritize that shit. So if you're a hockey fan in the greater Milwaukee area, head on down to Elwood's. You might even see me there, either enjoying a beer or on a poster while you're taking a piss. So, yeah.
All righty. Well, Nick, you got anything else you want to say?
Yep. Just before we leave, the two games that are going on right now, it's currently 2-1 Vegas in the second intermission, and it is 3-2 Kings with about 11 minutes to go in the second.
All right. Close ones. Come on, Dallas.
Just that's more for reference. If you're listening, that's the knowledge we had while recording this episode. That's as far as it got for us. So correct. If we said something crazy and then, like, I don't know, the Kings got shit pumped like 10-3 or something, we didn't know about that. So
correct.
Oopsies. Okay. East Coast problem. Sorry. All right. That about wraps it up for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate the love and support as always. Keep following along on the social media. And without further ado,
class dismissed.